Hello, everyone, to the Other Modern, the only podcast for Magic's Editor Modern, the format. I'm Piper, or that damn pipsqueak, and with me is a guest host today, Monger.
Hello.
Right, so this is kind of the first episode of the podcast. Technically, there's another one that's been lost to history that Matt and I recorded a while ago. But yeah, we're just gonna get into it and discuss the meta and the new set that's about to, or that has already dropped a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it's a big one.
So I think let's start with talking about the new set, Descent through the Highlands. Descent from the
Descent.
Highlands?
Yes.
Descent from the Highlands, okay.
Created by Fifth Dragon.
Yeah, created by Fifth Dragon. So DHL was added to the format as one of the wild card sets. It has 137 cards, so it's a relatively small set. And I think compared to some of the other sets we've seen in the recent past, it's an overall low power level set, but there's a couple cards in here that do some crazy stuff.
Agreed.
So yeah, what cards are you particularly looking forward to playing with or seeing? What cards do you think will have the most impact on the format from DHL?
That's a good question. There's a lot that are pretty close to potentially playable, but I'd say that some of the ones that I'm looking at are like grindy value pieces. Coonity. I have no idea how to pronounce that. Scion, which is a 3-mana green and white creature. It's a 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, you'll tutor a creature card with converted mana cost 2 or less and put it into your hand. But it also has revive, so you can pay 3 mana and exile it from your graveyard to create a token that's a copy of it. So I see this as similar to good old Idyllic Tutor with legs, which also saw play in Ardy's Midrange, where it's going to grab you a valuable card, except while it's limited by converted mana cost, you can also flash it back, so to say.
Yeah, I think I've been personally evaluating a lot of these revive cards as if they actually had Conjure, and that's been a mistake on my part because ha getting to keep the body is probably incredibly relevant. Two or less allows you to hit things like Warfield Excavator. It allows you to hit Purging Watchkeeper, the Unmasker of Fate's Design. We don't have any good like Walking Ballista type cards that get tutored by this, but it feels like there's some
Sure.
pretty serious things that you can find.
Indeed. And one that I actually noticed was that Leyshia's Greenblade in the set is a 2-mana Reclamation Sage with a 1-mana enter the battlefield trigger. So that is actually tutorable by Scion.
That's pretty cool that you can find that. I don't know if we have a caustic Caterpie type effect, but that would be the other thing I would look for to do something similar. Yeah, the main thing that I've been looking at in this set has been Diabolic Designs as one of the first things, which is just another good edict. We have plenty of those, but this notably can pick back up Kaijun or Kai Wedge, and I think that actually has the ability to make it slightly more powerful in an edge case than just running good old Memento Mori. I'm also particularly excited for, shoot, where is it? Dryad of the Grove.
Oh, yeah.
Dryad of the Grove puts us is one green for a 1/1 with tap, untap target basic land, and that means that we can run eight different creatures that are one drops that untap lands. And given that we have eight wild growth effects, we're now looking at critical mass to consistently have 4 mana on turn two, which you can then use to play, Snowfield Mothers or Mossing Companion, which dropped in 101 but never saw play.
Till
It
now, perhaps.
feels until now. Really high impact. Well, I guess the kind of one flaw of this deck is it's just a mid-range deck. You're just trying to curve out and play scary creatures. You're also not really curving out. You're trying to go from 1 mana to 4 mana or 1 mana to 3 mana in the like fair use case.
Oh, yes.
But it does technically just lose to decks that are trying to go over you with combo, or that can interact with you easily, but it might sh screw up combo a bunch.
I'm wondering if there are some higher cost disruptive cards that would play a role similar to Unmasker that just haven't seen play because before now they've been too high cost for decks to consider.
Yeah. Like Aguri, for instance, has seen play off and on. Maybe something like that be good. The main problem is since this
That's true.
only untaps basic lands, you can't reliably produce black-black on turn two with it. Or
That's true as well.
it.
Especially because Primal Resurgence only produces one green mana.
Yeah. So you're really looking at those green four drops and maybe at some of the like black three drops. Yeah, I think other than those, Descent has a couple cards that kind of appeal to a more combo nature. It has a couple of things that look like they could be very promising for blue-white control, in particular Children of the Clouds. There's one card that I'm a little bit terrified of, which is the Aurora's Heart, which is the legendary blue land, tap, pay one life, add blue, eight blue, exile the Aurora's Heart from your hand, target player takes two extra turns after this one. The fact that this is a land tutorable time stretch potentially makes it slot into Tron turns.
Absolutely. I can say from having played the deck that having the High Noon Tavern as a tutorable wheel was massive in turning late game Sylvan Scryings into actual value. And now that you can take turns with it and keep setting things up, that's also huge.
Beyond that, I think those are like the cards I'm most excited for. There is technically the Elk synergy stuff, but I'm not really interested in that at the present moment. There's a couple of cards that might be like edge case viable in sideboards, such as Great Sable Stag. But I think those are the cards that I'm most excited for.
There were a couple other ones that didn't get mentioned. Magmatic Catch. So even through the nerf, I think that it's still a very solid card because it plays exactly into what the red deck wants to do, which is just fuel on gas.
Yeah, that's true. The one hesitation I have on that front is having just gotten second place with a red deck, I have no interest in running that in Nin-Hassir red.
Oh,
And I'm
that's fair.
and there's a part of me that wants to say that non-Nin-Hassir red decks are likely there's some matchups that they're likely better in. But I think they're likely giving up so many percentage points against the field that it's better to just play this like slightly bigger version.
Also true, especially with Wave of Decay currently large and in
Yeah.
charge.
It's very difficult to justify bringing the deck full of, one ones for one that prowess up and attack a bunch when you could just get Wave of Decayed out or Exeunted out. And instead of playing the deck that has a slightly slower and more resilient burn game plan seems more tempting.
I'd agree there.
But yeah, I think one of another card that's kind of exciting, but I have no idea where the place for it is, other than it probably involves Union Rail Strikebreaker somehow, is Heartless Pact, which is two and a blue for an instant with blood price one blue, which is you may cast the card by sacrificing a creature and paying its blood price. Counter target spell unless its controller pays four. Obviously, the three mana version of this is not very good, but the one mana version is very tempting. And it reminds me a lot of a Glacia card I got really excited for, which was the same thing but with dominance. So if you had dominance, it was a one drop counter spell. And if you didn't have dominance, it was a three drop counter spell. And it turns out dominance is a really hard mechanic to turn on reliably in the early game. But this might be easier.
If I'm not incorrect, that one was also non-creature spells. I can't quite remember.
The Glacia one?
Yeah, I'm double checking right now, but
Got it. Yeah. I don't remember off the top of my head.
oh yes, Blow Away. Which is no, that is any spell. I'm unconvinced on the Blood Price variant because, as you said, it's good with Union Rail Strikebreaker. But if you don't have Strikebreaker, then sacrificing one of your threats usually isn't ideal. And especially because you can't cast it with just Strikebreaker on the field. But
Yeah, I suppose that's
it's
fair.
worth looking into, I'd say.
I don't know, between that and like Rogar's Frenzy, assuming you're putting in the Strikebreaker deck that isn't like, straight up villainy, I think it's possible there's enough incidental token generation that's good that this could be a reasonable card. But I think only time will tell. I think in general, DHL is a set that's going to have a kind of low impact on the format. And honestly, I think that's for the best because transitioning to the other topic, I think the format is in a really good place right now.
Yeah, I would be inclined to agree with you. There's a really wide variety of decks right now, and even the cards. Well, I say that there's a variety of decks, which is true. But even the cards that are potentially very powerful, like Villainy, aren't showing up in every deck. It's not like what was it like a GP
Yeah, we're not dealing with
something.
Hogak levels
Or
of nonsense also. Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of generally true about MSEM is it's always been a Brewis format, and even when there has been a this is the clear best deck, people don't play the clear best deck. They play whichever deck they enjoy playing the most that they think is strongest. Like when Underworld Cookbook was a deck that was everywhere. It was only really two people playing it. It was just CFT Sock and just nobody. And I think if you went back in time and talked to people when that deck was active, most people there would agree, yeah, that's probably the best deck in the format. And the deck ended up seeing like three, four nerfs. I think three nerfs and a ban before it finally stopped showing up. But I do genuinely think that the format usually is a Brewer's format. And I think there's kind of a problem to that, which is it means the format's incredibly inconsistent, where the decks that appear one month will have all vanished and been replaced the next month. And I
agree.
think while that's really cool, it's also really frustrating from someone who's trying to metagame and trying to figure out what the meta is. And one of the things I've really appreciated in the past like 2 to 4 months is it feels like we're starting to see a more stabilizing meta. And there's still a lot of brewing and a lot of people bringing new decks, but there are some styles of decks you can rely on always showing up.
I think that it also helps that a lot of people are finding their niches in terms of what decks they usually bring. I mean, for example, there's Fluffy Deathbringer, who can usually be counted upon to bring some form of red aggro, although Dragon Ramp was a departure from that. Or like Urhearzee has been bringing chart control for the past few Grand Prix.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the case is some people just find their kind of their ideal deck and they just ride it. And I think the other thing that's true is people are just finding, I think we are starting to find some of the strategies that might be the most powerful thing. And that was one of the things that was always kind of consistently frustrating when the meta was just these kind of wild, like, what is the weirdest deck I can bring? Is it It was really hard to tell how powerful any of these decks were in relation to each other. And I'm not certain what changed, but it feels like there was a switch, and now people know these specific cards are incredibly powerful, and these specific interactions are incredibly powerful. And I need to either bring a deck that leverages some number of those, or that has specific good game against those. And I think the kind of surge of villainy decks that happened 1 GP. And then that falling back down, and people having tech against villainy, but also villainy isn't an overwhelming part of the meta. But if you are unprepared, it'll usually just eat you alive. I think that's a really cool spot to be in.
Agreed. I think that one thing that's important is that the meta has a lot of variety, but there's also a lot of counterplay within that variety, where you can, I'd say part of that is due to the sideboard rule, but part of that is that you're able to pack general answers and also specific answers.
Yeah, I think the one other thing that this is caused by is the combination of Villains the Musical and Storytime. I think we're a really high, we're both really high impact sets to the format, and I think had a similar shift in the format compared to Carpe Arcanum and TOJ did. And not that all the sets that enter our format don't have some degree of impact, but I think like TOJ and Carpe Arcanum added like 20 plus new archetypes to the format that felt genuinely powerful. And then after that, I'm trying to remember a bunch of the sets that came in between. There were more subtle changes. Like UNR added a couple of staple threats or removal spells or support cards for various different strategies, and those went somewhere.
And
And I'm
then
feeling.
there's also Glacia and Harvest Festival, which
Yeah, thank you.
were also low impact sets, judging by the recollection there.
Yeah, I mean, Harvest Festival added, I'm trying to remember some of the things Harvest Festival added, but if you look at the top 20 cards we predicted would see play from Glacia and Harvest Festival, I think only like half to a third of them actually ended up making it anywhere.
And Cain Dancer ended up getting nerfed, so one of Glacia's major contributions isn't here anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, some of that is just people didn't brew with those cards, and then a couple of months passed and something entirely new came out. And I think that's part of the life cycle of MSEM. But I personally think that the meta is feels a lot less turbulent. And I think some of that is the council really stepped back and stopped hotfixing every card that got printed and that was too good and started taking a slightly more slow, even-handed approach. But I think between that slowdown and between the one massive nerf and banning series that happened at the end of the year, I think the meta has started to really crystallize in a really interesting fashion.
I think I'd agree with that. One thing that I've been considering, and I'm not sure if this is correct or not, but is it possible that the change from double elimination to Swiss could have prompted the shift? Because people are, it's easier to judge how good a specific deck is.
I think I, yeah, finish your sentence. Sorry.
I was going to say, like I believe Fifth Dragon won or placed highly at a Grand Prix with Grixis Ninjas, and then finished in the bottom half of the standings the next two GPs with the same deck.
Which, to be fair, that was largely because of real life stuff, preventing Fifth from being able to participate in those GPs to the same extent. But I think otherwise that's a really accurate sentiment. I think it's also not just it's easier to tell if a deck is good or not. It's also you get just more time to play the deck. You get 4 rounds if you want to play them, usually 3 rounds with a
Also
bye. And that means you see your deck in action more and you have more time to tune it. And you're also less likely to say, well, I O2'd, I guess I'm never going to play this deck again. Because you get to see the one game where it worked and you say, oh, okay, this is why it worked and this is why it didn't work those other times.
And then maybe that's another part of it as to why the meta is becoming a little more stable, is because more people are willing to bring the same deck but with changes, because they see that time where it worked and they know what they have
Yeah.
to adjust.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. So the two other things that are kind of looming in the next month are, so this month we have one more GP, and then at the end of this month, two new sets get added to the format, and we have a Pro Tour coming up. So not
Another two
to
Pro Tour
force you
stuff there.
to spill any tech that you have in mind for the Pro Tour, but if you have any thoughts you want to share on it, please, I would love to hear them.
Whew, that's a good question. So can I ask you a question real quick? As a council member, are there any
Yep.
buffs or nerfs planned before the Pro Tour alongside the new sets entering the format?
I think we will probably are I hadn't considered that, but I certainly will push for better transparency on that front. If we are going to make buffs or nerfs, we should try to decide them by the middle of the month or have the Pro Tour played without those buffs or nerfs, just because for competitive integrity, it feels really difficult to tell people, three or four members of the Pro Tour have this advantage because they know, oh, I better not play deck X because it's about to lose a key role card. So currently we don't have any nerfs planned, but I'm willing to say we as a council should increase transparency for the sake of the Pro Tour.
Okay. I was asking because one of the cards that so right now for the Pro Tour, I'm not inclined to bring a creature-based deck because at the moment I feel that there's a lot of tools that well, I'm not inclined to bring a creature-based deck that doesn't have a lot of value.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just not bringing an aggro deck then. Because there's a good variety of wipes right now, whether it's just Setting Sun, Wrath of God, Wave of Decay, Flesh to Rot, or just like Chaldron's Rage. There's a lot of tools that can be used to mitigate the advantages that you gain from just rushing face. So I think that the decks that I would be looking at is something that's nearly entirely creatureless and just generates a lot of value, like enchantment control, something that just generates a lot of value, like Ardy's mid-range, probably an Abzan build. Or just more of a or I've also been considering just going back to one of the two decks that I've been running recently in Blue Black Villainy or in Angel Touched. Because I think that those are relatively well positioned, especially since I feel that others are unlikely to bring creature-based aggro decks.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I personally have resolved to try to not metagame the Pro Tour too much just because people can and will decide to bring anything.
That's true.
And I think I would hazard the guess that based on the last Pro Tour, you are not in a good spot if you choose to bring an incredibly fragile deck. You are much better off playing a deck that can interact but has a proactive game plan. But I don't know, it's also just very hard to say because,
Yeah, I was going to say, your conclusion would be the opposite of the one that I would guess, especially considering that the Pro Tour does not use the Magic Set Editor Modern 2 sideboard rule. So sideboards are submitted alongside the deck.
So the reason my logic behind you don't want to play a fragile deck is you don't want to be playing a fragile deck that acts on an axis that people will assume someone's going to be doing. So like I would be scared to bring a graveyard deck because I know that if I'm playing black, I'm sleeving Memento Moris just because the flexibility of being able to say either answer a creature or nuke your yard is unparalleled.
Indeed.
And I think we're hitting the point where people can main deck graveyard hate without regretting too many life choices.
I think that Memento Mori is obviously main deckable. I'm not quite sure about saying Cold Grave, though.
Sure, but Purging Watchkeep, for instance, or Warfield Excavator,
Very true.
or Earthfeeder Worm.
Good old worm. So I don't actually have results from the last Pro Tour, but looking at it, it looks like something like three or no, it looks like just two of the decks are these fragile combo-based decks.
Yeah, so of those decks, the deck that ended up winning the Pro Tour last time was a businessman Ardy's deck. So slow, heavy value to outvalue control, and a non-zero amount of interaction and grave hate to beat slower graveyard-based decks. So what ended up happening, I don't remember the entire first round. I know Herzi lost to CFT Sock. Just nobody beat whoever just nobody was playing against. Windy lost to Cajun. Cyber beat whoever Cyber was playing against. And then Cajun lost to Cyber because it turns out Witchbolt is really bad against Purging Watchkeep.
Oh, yeah.
And CFT Sock beat Just Nobody because it turns out Fragile Graveyard combo deck is really bad against a deck with a bunch of counter magic and a good clock. And then in the finals, Cyber beat CFT Sock because Purging Watchkeeper turns out to be very good versus Phoenixes. So yeah,
Let's see.
those were the results of the Pro Tour.
All right. Thank you for that heads up. Although I do wonder if things would have gone differently if Cajun and Windy, both on the fragile combo based decks, would have gotten paired against other people round one.
So one of the things that I would say is I don't think, other than the fact it died to every form of graveyard hate imaginable, I think the fact that Cajun's deck was effectively a control deck that had the ability that had this combo finish is an important reason why it was able to beat Windy's deck. And I think based on how we saw the matchup play out in later GPs and skirmishes, Abzan Arteez is also favored versus Infect, just because it puts blockers on the field and then it can chump block or threaten to kill the dudes. Versus I don't know, it's one of those things that's very hard to say because everyone knew their positions ahead of time. And I don't think everyone knew what their opponents would be on, but I'm pretty sure Cajun knew that Windy was most likely going to be on Infect because Windy had been playtesting Infect prior to the Pro Tour. And if you end up looking at Cajun's deck list, you will note that some of the removal Cajun is running is White Edicts, is target player sacrifice an attacking creature, which is specifically good versus Infect, which can hexproof up its dudes.
Indeed.
So there's those small hedges people can take while not going full on metagame and say, oh, I'm just going to play a deck that spikes my round one matchup.
I suppose it'll take until Grand Prix X this time for the final pairings to be announced.
Yeah, that's true. I'm pretty sure our top four or five is locked, but as long as the bottom six, oh, sorry, the bottom six, seven, and eight are up, up in the air, we just don't know who's going to be matched up against each other, which is
Indeed.
slightly unfortunate. But yeah, I think, we've covered a lot of ground. I think this is a reasonable place to resolve the first episode. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I don't believe so. I'm just going to say hello to all the lovely listeners out there and have a nice morning, evening, afternoon, next
Wherever you
day.
end up listening. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully this is a thing that I end up doing with more frequency. I think there's a lot of awesome people in this community, so I would love for any and all of you, although hopefully not all at once, to join in the podcasting. I think just kind of getting a more consistent idea of where the pulse of the format is and what people think the meta looks like or what sets people are excited for. And I certainly will be leaning towards when we next get the sets, I definitely want to do a quick episode on initial excitement, what players think is going to happen with those sets, etc. And when we next have a GP up, when we see initial deck lists, I would love to do another episode to talk about those deck lists. So you see the kind of content we're going through. It's possible that another thing we might do is kind of deep dives on specific decks. So if there's a specific deck that is, tearing up a GP or that wins a GP or a Pro Tour or whatever, I think it'd be very cool to do a type of deck tech episode. But, this one's just a proof of concept and talking about the comings and goings of the current format. And with that, I hope everyone had a wonderful time listening. Hopefully, this episode is edited to be slightly more pleasant to listen to. And I hope everyone has an incredible day. And thank you, Monger, for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.